Litcast Slovakia, the podcast about Slovak literature in English. Welcome to Litcast Slovakia number 10. The first 9 episodes of our podcast have focused on prose, so it's only fair to devote the next 2 installments to poetry. I'm Julia Sherwood, and my guest today is James Sutherland Smith, a poet and translator based in Prešov. He has lived in Slovakia on and off since 1989 and taught English at the University of Prešov until his retirement in 2018. James has published several prize-winning collections of his own poetry and has established himself as one of the foremost translators of Slovak poetry into English. Hello, James. Welcome to the virtual studio of Litka Slovakia. I hope you're well today.
Hello. How are you? Fine. I hope you're well too.
I'm fine too. Let me start with a standard biographical question. How did you end up in Slovakia, and what made you spend almost half of your life there rather than in one of the many other countries you have lived in?
Well, in 1986, I thought I'd get out of the Middle East where I was working. It was well paid, but rather soul-destroying work. But then, just as I was going to do my master's in the University of East Anglia, I got an offer I couldn't refuse to work in Qatar. So I went there for 2 years, and at the end of the 2 years, I'd really forgotten I'd got a place to do an MA at the University of East Anglia, but they sent me a letter saying, "Do you still want your place?" And I said, as I was up to renew a contract, I decided that actually I'd go to East Anglia. And so that was from 88 to 89. In the spring of 89, I was wondering what I would do when I got my master's. And there were loads and loads of jobs offered by British Council in Eastern Europe. And I applied for a number of them, and I actually got offered two jobs, one in Russia and one in the then Czechoslovakia. So I did a little bit of research, mostly for travel agent, and decided that I would be better fed in Czechoslovakia. And so I ended up in Prešov. And then 8 weeks after I arrived, Czechoslovakia kindly organized a revolution. And then the following year, I met my wife and stayed here. That's it.
Now, your wife, Vera, is credited as your co-translator in most, if not all, of your published translations. And since I also co-translate with my husband, Peter, who you may hear sneezing in the background, I'd love to hear how that process works in your case. Can you say a few words about how you translate together?
For the first anthology, Not Waiting for Miracles, the first co-translator was Stefania Allen, who was a Slovak lady who married to the first creator of an English language textbook way back in the 1940s, Bill Stannard Allen. And she was actually Branio Hockel's aunt. But then as the anthology went on, and we added women poets, Vera started to also translate. It was a rather time-consuming process in those days to send texts to England, because Stefania lived in Guildford. So Vera was the base translator for women poets. And how do we do it? Well, in those days, as my Slovak was very, very limited, she did basically a base translation, and which is what Stefania did. And then I sat down with a text and a rather limited translation dictionary, and then puzzled out what might be the most poetic versions and as accurate as possible. I seem to kind of have an instinctive feel of what the poet was trying to say. I generally write my own poetry through sound, and then I would say the Slovak originals to myself, and then kind of, I guess, intuited or had a psychic link with the poet, I'm not sure. But the base translation, and then I work on my own. And that's how we went on for the first few years. And then later on, I became much more independent. And Vera basically was checking my translations. And then most recently, say with Maria Ferenčová and with Mila's second selection in Britain, I've virtually done all the work on my own and then put them out for correction. And of course, that's still necessary because I still make rather silly mistakes. Except these days, my adopted daughter Katerina has taken over. Basically, all I need is someone to check the absolute sense of what I've translated.
Thank you. Now, you said in an interview, quote, "When I arrived in Czechoslovakia in 1989, I discovered that very little Slovak literature, especially poetry, had been translated into English. I set about trying to remedy this." And you have certainly done so, and spectacularly. By my reckoning, and I have probably missed some, you have translated or co-translated over a dozen Slovak poets and have at least 13 collections by individual writers under your belt. And on top of that, you have contributed to 8 anthologies. So what I'd like to ask is, do you choose the poets to translate yourself? And if so, do you pick authors whose sensibility or style is similar to your own, or are you attracted by contrast? And also, is there a Slovak poet who has especially affected or inspired you?
Well, in the beginning, Braňo Hochul, being an alpha male type, chose the poets, but then I insisted on women poets, but he chose those, except Stanka Hrobakova, who I decided to put in myself because I'd been to a couple of events with her and liked her style. And then after that, it's actually more or less seeing who is prominent, meeting poets and also reading poets and choosing what I like. So, for example, I really liked the poetry of Ivan Lavčík and Ivan Štrbka. I've always also tried to insist that there's some kind of gender balance. So I'm always looking for women poets to translate. I remember that when Stanka Hrobakova was editing the anthology 100 Years of Slovak Literature, there was seemed to me a dearth of women Slovak poets. So I insisted on people like Vatketjova and Masha Halemova.
Well, you have actually taken me to my next question because we are now in August, which is Women in Translation Month, and I was going to focus on two highly acclaimed women poets who you've translated more recently. So I'll start with Mila Haugová. Your translation of her collection Eternal Traffic appeared earlier this year. And an earlier collection of hers that you've also translated, Scent of the Unseen, was published in 2003. Haugová is undoubtedly a poet of world stature. If proof were needed, she has recently received the very prestigious Vilenica International Literature Prize.
Well, in the 1990s, she published two wonderful collections. I was trying to remember the name. Pralaska and Nostalgia. And I really love those, the poems in that. But then later on, later collections seem to appeal to me much more than that kind of middle period.
Right, and so if we move on now to Maria Ferenczuhova, her collection Tidal Events was published in 2018 in your translation. And Maria has been selected for this year's European Writers' Tour of the UK, organized by UNIC, the EU cultural network. And she was due to appear at the Poetry Society Cafe in London this spring, but because of the pandemic, it's been rescheduled for the 9th of October. Or if it's still not possible by then to hold public events, which we can't do in the UK. I know that they've been happening in Slovakia. It'll be held online. Now, so what should English readers who might watch this online or who might come to the Poetry Society Cafe event, what should they know about Ferenczuhová's work?
I would say she's primarily an urban poet, which is unusual in Slovakia, which is basically a country of small towns. Her collection Immunita, of course, dealt with illness, and she was rather ill from 2015 to 2016. And to my mind, that links with the earlier urban dystopian element. So I would say a very, very contemporary themes, a strong line, and also the possibility of lyricism.
Now, Ferenczuhová's collection was launched in London jointly with your own collection, The River and the Black Cat, which was your 13th. To those of your listeners who are not familiar with your work, how would you describe your own poetry?
Well, it has changed. In the right at the beginning, I was tended to be concerned with urban life, and also with since I travelled to the Middle East with the impact of a very, very different culture. I did have earlier models such as W.H. Auden, and also a rather neglected poet, although he seems to have recovered his reputation as a poet. That's Lawrence Durrell, whose poetry I loved, and also Bernard Spencer. But now I'm still concerned with the impact of living in a culture which was not originally my own, although now I would probably describe myself as half and half Central European. And also I'm much more concerned with nature. But not so much in terms of the European intellectual tradition, let's say, of someone like Blanchot, which is emerges very much out of kind of some sort of dialectic. I'm much more concerned with things in themselves and what they might be. So I tend to reject this, if there is poetry, then you've got to talk about silence, or if there is the thing itself, then you've got to talk about nothingness. And if there is life, you've got to talk about death. No, I don't like that. So my poetry is very much concerned with things I sense, things I feel. The thing in itself, making a poem as a verbal construct, which you can take on, the reader can take on their own terms.
In a recent interview with the literary journal Fractal, you said that the job of poetry is to expand the possibilities of language while preserving its complexity. And then you also said poetry ought to continuously enrich language, enabling it to stay as expressive as possible, to be an adaptable instrument of meaning. Would you say that this also applies to your work as a translator of poetry, this attempt to expand the possibilities of language?
Well, no, because you're constrained as a translator. I don't believe, I think there was a prominent professor who was on record of saying, talking about translating as a matter of creative infidelity. I try to be as faithful as possible to the original, which doesn't give me a license to stray away from what I understand as the meaning of the original. So the task of translating poetry is to try and render the original as faithfully as possible. Of course, it's not always possible to reproduce formal poetry in the same way, but to do it in the most expressive way, given the constraints of the original.
So this is poetry, but you have also translated some prose. So do you see a fundamental difference between the ways you approach the translation of poetry and prose?
Yeah, I find prose translation much more difficult. When I came to translate Slovak poetry, I've been writing poetry for well over 20 years. And in a sense, I knew what the poet was trying to say. You know, even though I had difficulties in getting a literal sense, coming to a new poem in Slovak and also in Serbian, I know what the poet is going to say, or what the poet wants to say. Whereas with prose, I'm continually surprised. And it's a much more laborious process. It's getting easier, but with literary prose, it's really much more hard work, shall we say.
Well, you are a poet, so that makes perfect sense, actually. Yes. To come back to translating women, do you find that being a man poses some additional challenges? I'm thinking, for example, of Milo Haugová, a poet whose work very often explores themes related to the female body and erotic love.
That's straying into a kind of gender version of the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is impossible to possibly to translate the experience and sensibility of a different gender. I think it is possible to translate women poets. Nobody's been rude enough to sort of say what that I'm being impertinent translating women poets. I'm a human being, a highly imaginative one, so I don't think it's a challenge. And Mila's not exactly Sharon Olds in terms of eroticism or Erica Jong, so I don't find that what she writes is too alien or disconcerting.
So it's being a human being first, really.
Yes.
Yes. Just to talk about human beings takes me to human real-life relationships. So the first time I met you in Bratislava, you were also meeting Maria Ferencz-Juhová. So was that to discuss your translation of her poetry with her, and how did your collaboration work?
She was very modest about English, and in fact she is a formidable speaker of English, and I found when I translated, I sent the first versions to her, and she was saying no, this is wrong. So she had her own put, even at a basic level of literal translation, and then just to make sure, she sort of said, would you mind terribly if Michal Tallow cast an eye over the translation? And he did so, and again his input was important.
So to round off our podcast, can you tell me if we can look forward to more of your own poetry now, and also to more translations from the Slovak? What do you have in the works?
Well, I have a collection at a publisher. It's been there nearly a year now. You haven't responded. I suspect that the coronavirus has slowed up his reading. And I, I'm still writing away. I would like to finally, after many years of promising myself, and also sort of hinting to Ivan Strupka that I ought to do a kind of selected poems of his in English, which would be a pretty massive book, since like Mila, he writes an awful lot. But I started to get down to it, but then I got distracted by some commissioned translations. Whereas translating Slovak poets, you translate first and then look around for somebody to publish them, and they may or may not pay you for that.
So I do hope you get on with your translations of Ivan Štrbka, and that you find a publisher for it. And thank you very much for coming on this podcast.
Once I finished producing a selection of Štrbka's work, I wouldn't mind translating Eva Luka, because I like her work.
I look forward to that. I look forward to reading your own poems and more of your translations. And all the best, good luck, and thank you very much for taking time to come to the podcast.
All right. Thank you very much for having me on.